Hello and welcome to the Customer Insight Leader Podcast. Data, analytics, big data science, machine learning, customer insight, behavioral science, blockchain, data ops, data engineering, agile working. Phew, too many terms, too many things to think about. Do you as a leader need somewhere to turn? To hear what other leaders are doing? To hear what really makes a difference in your business? Welcome. The Customer Insight Leader Podcast is here for you. Each episode, we'll be interviewing a different leader in the fields of customer insight, data, and analytics to hear what they really do, what really makes a difference. So settle down, get that cup of coffee, and enjoy the Customer Insight Leader Podcast. Hello and welcome to the Customer Insight Leader Podcast, a place to hear from today's leaders in the fields of customer insight, data, and analytics. I'm your host, Paul Loughlin, and with me today is Randy Crum. Randy is a data viz designer and author of the book Cool Infographics, Effective Communication with Data Visualization and Design. He's founder of InfoNewt, a data viz design firm, organizer of the Dallas-Fort Worth Data Viz Meetup Group, and instructor of the Data Visualization Design course at Southern Methodist University. Somehow, he also finds time to run the popular website coolinfographics.com. And any listeners who also follow me on Twitter will have seen me quite often sharing posts from Randy. So it's a great opportunity to have him here for a longer talk today. Welcome, Randy.
Thanks, Paul. Glad to be here.
Good to have you with us as well. As listeners have probably picked up from my intro, Randy falls into the category of data viz gurus, so well worth hearing this episode to complement the conversation I had with John Schwabisch back in episode 15. We are back thinking about data viz, folks. Anyhow, let's crack on, as there's so much we could cover in this conversation. Randy, I always ask my guests when they come on to give us a little bit of their backstory, their career history, if you like, so listeners know where you're coming from. Could you tell us a bit about your background and how you've ended up focusing on infographics and data viz?
Sure. My background, let's see, I started, my degree is in mechanical engineering from North Carolina State University in Raleigh, North Carolina. Go Wolfpack. And so I come from a very technical data background. I then spent about 15 years in consumer product companies, mainly doing product development. I did engineering and operations, a lot of materials planning, but then a lot of product development. And so managing product development teams, a lot of market research, a lot of product testing, that type of thing. Yeah. And so in that time, specifically in the product development, we did a whole bunch of market research, consumer research, and had to deal with a lot of market research data. And that's where I started just getting overwhelmed with how much data we had to digest and then be able to turn around and communicate to audiences, both internally and externally. And that's where I started trying to find ways to better communicate this data and get better at visualizing this data, because just the standard charts weren't enough. We would do, say, a segmentation study or a conjoint study, you know, and we would get back this 300-page report, and it would come with 150 bar charts in it. You know, and it was just overwhelming, and you'd be just, you know, mind numb to this repetition of bar chart after bar chart after bar chart after bar chart. And, you know, I started trying to find ways to visualize the data that would make it more relevant, more meaningful, whether that was a consumer persona or visualizing products on the shelves or, you know, visualizing, you know, better ways to compare results or Likert scale data. You know, there's all kinds of different things you run into in research data. But that's where I got my start. And then in 2007, at the time, I was the VP of product marketing and development for a pet product company. And I was trying to figure out, this is 2007, how blogs worked. Is there a way to figure out, you know, can we communicate to our customers? And is there a way to interact with our customers and provide information? And before I launched an official company blog, I decided to launch just one for test. And that's how I launched Cool Infographics, because I'd been saving all these examples, right, just for myself of good data visualizations that I liked, and, you know, whether I had a file folder of them or had them hanging up in my office or, you know, whatever. I was just saving these examples. And so I just started posting these as links as the first couple posts on Cool Infographics. And I didn't think Cool Infographics was going to last, you know, more than 6 months, right? It was just a test to figure out how do blogs work and how do you run it and what kind of analytics can you see and what kind of interaction can you have with the audience and the readers of a blog and that type of thing. And within about 12 months, because it kept going, because I kept finding more and more examples of data visualizations. In about 12 months, I was getting more traffic on the Cool Infographics site than the company was on the company website. And so it really had legs, right? It had some momentum going, and that's what it kept going from that point on. And then in 2010, I was in between jobs and I was looking for a new position. I was in the market. I was interviewing doing all the job hunting things you do. And for years I'd been telling people, you know, no, I can't, I'm not going to do designs, because through the Cool Infographics site, people had been sending me requests. And I was like, no, it's just sort of a side thing for me. I'm not doing design. But while I was job hunting, I said, okay, I'll try a couple of these. You're like, why not do some of these while I'm job hunting? And pretty quickly I was doing more design work than I was job hunting, and hence the birth of InfoNewt and my own design firm company. And I've been doing DataViz as my own company since 2010 now, so now we're up to 11 years.
Well done. Good, nice story, and some lovely themes to that I'd like to explore, Randy. Both would have become opportunities for you, and congratulations on the tenure of coolinfographics.com. I didn't realize quite how long you've been going with the blog. That is a success story.
Yeah, slow and steady. There may be weeks that go by that I don't post anything on Cool Infographics, and then sometimes it's every day. It just keeps trucking along, and it gets a whole bunch of traffic. People really likes to see the good examples and other links that we post on Cool Infographics.
Indeed they do. Slow and steady wins the race, as they say. I'm interested, I'll just pick up on, you mentioned in the beginning of that, starting with this challenge of visualizing market research data, and I imagine quite a few listeners in the audience, including myself, can relate to long, boring market research debriefs where some agency feels they have to go through every slide in their pack. I can empathize that it needs to be improved. Can you tell us a bit more about what you learned helped when visualizing consumer research? What actually did make it better? What worked?
Taking data out helped quite a bit, because you're right. Like I said, there was like a 300 page report with all this data. And especially when you contract with an outside firm to do research for you and they come back with a report, they feel like they have to overwhelm you with data, because, you know, you've got to get value for that money you spent. Right. So they have to show you every single data point that they gathered. And as the customer, right, of that report, you know, we're the consumer of that data. We have to not only understand it, you know, and then we had to turn around and tell our executives or our management, all right, here's what we learned. And here's what we want to do with it. So we're asking you for some resources or some money to turn around and develop this new marketing campaign or this new project because of this research data. And then we have to go to the retailers and pitch to them as to why this new product, you know, needs a space on the shelf. And then ultimately we need to use that data to drive packaging design and marketing to the end users, right? So that data really drives a whole bunch of things down the pipe.
Sure.
And I found over time that, you know, you don't want to overwhelm your audience with too much data, right? You want to really just get to the point, because your audience doesn't want to see all that data. They're assuming you went through all that data. Yeah. That's your job, right? They just want to know the answer.
Yeah.
And you can put all that data in the appendix. You can make it available separately, you know, something like that. What they want to see is a nice, short, concise story or insight or message, you know, that's what is it you learned from the data. And if they want to challenge it, if they want to question it or dive deeper, you can. But the mistake that almost everybody makes, maybe that's oversimplifying, that almost everybody makes it, but a lot of people make this mistake, which is they dive straight into as much detail as possible. Yeah. And you really lose your audiences that way.
Yeah, I completely agree, Randy. It struck me, and I've seen it both in-house, but particularly with external agencies, like you say, this feeling that they demonstrate the value if they go through so much, that proves how much work they've done somehow. And yet, actually, that is a lack of doing the extra work that people want to reduce down to what was insightful, what's relevant here. You know, you've got the background, that's fine. You can prove that if I ask you questions, but you'll really impress me and actually do what agencies want to do, which is prove we were value for money, if you can sort of do it in 1, 2, 3 slides and they're really relevant and impactful. It's funny how that penny doesn't land, even with quite commercial agencies.
Right.
Okay. Actually, another thing you touched on, you kind of hinted to all this, Randy, I begin to explore, is you kind of talked about things like pictures of products on shelves, etc. I'm struck that unlike some people who talk and teach it, etc., on data visualization, it feels a bit like, how can I describe it? Your repertoire is a bit wider. You might use photographic imagery. You might use kind of artistic effects, not just technical charts and what is officially the best practice visualization. Am I interpreting that right, that you used a whole range of other visual creative ways to make these market research communications more interesting?
Oh, absolutely. You know, whether it's, you know, icons and not a chart, or staging photos to represent data, we do that quite a bit. Whether it's, you know, we're talking about making a pitch to a retailer, to, you know, someone who's in charge of what's on the shelf, we would do some planogram data analytics where we would take a photo of what's on the shelf today and then do like a color overlay of price points or profit per product, you know, or something like that. You know, anything we could do that would make it more relevant to the data, you know, so instead of just being, a clustered bar chart of all your price points of what's on the shelf today, you know, if we could do it with the photo of all the products that are on the shelf today, you know, that makes it more meaningful and makes it more connected to the products, so that people, they make connections better if they can see what the data is related to.
Yeah, that makes sense, Randy. I wonder whether perhaps there's a risk these days that, God, I don't want to insult anybody here because I've got so much admiration for so many people in the field who know more than me, but almost a risk that some of the data viz purists, if I put it that way, have such a technically correct, minimalist style idea as to the best charts to use to optimally, efficiently communicate something. Some of the greater artistic license and other visual means of communication gets missed out when that might work really well for an audience. Do you think I'm onto anything there?
Yeah, I mean, there is certainly an argument there, and there have certainly been experts that, you know, take someone like a Tufte who's, you know, talked about things like chart junk, right?
Yeah.
Where you can absolutely go too far. You can absolutely, you know, over-decorate a data visualization and it's no longer meaningful, right? And make it complex and make it hard to understand, where, you know, the primary purpose of a data visualization is to communicate the data.
Absolutely.
Anything we can do to be more effective at communicating the data is fair game, right? So if coloring the bars in a bar chart to match the brands that we're trying to represent makes it more understandable, then fabulous. That's great. That makes it more relevant, you know, or if including photos of the products on top of the bars, you know, so that you can see the products that we're talking about instead of having to remember what those products are. Great. That's fantastic. But yeah, you can totally go way too far and over illustrate, over annotate, you know, just make it unreadable, or even just, you know, make it so complex that you're now going in the other direction and making it harder to understand.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I guess I'm getting this picture. You can kind of go to one of two extremes. I'm a big fan of a lot of the advice from Edward Tufte, but I absolutely get that risk of chart junk, and decluttering can be so effective, but maybe there's a minimalist wasteland the other way as well.
Especially in consumer research.
Yes.
That especially you're trying to communicate data to an audience that wasn't there doing the research. They weren't there talking to the consumers. You might've been doing some in-home interviews. So you've actually got some photos of, you know, people's lifestyles or people using products in their own environments.
Absolutely.
You know, you can describe that all you want, but if you could show that and then overlay some data on top of that, that makes it so much more meaningful for people who weren't there, for people who weren't able to experience it like you, the researcher, were. That really helps quite a bit.
Yeah, that makes sense, Randy. It strikes me, actually, our conversation is kind of leading into, I guess, beyond data visualization, there's the wider power of principles of communication and visual communication. I believe the certified course that you develop and teach at university is actually a combination of data viz and communication, kind of pretty unique approach, I think. What are the benefits you find of covering those two topics together rather than just sticking to data viz?
I found, you know, I developed this course, the certificate course, and I brought in a second instructor to help the communication and presentation piece. Okay. So there are two of us that teach this. It's an 18-week certificate course.
Okay.
And there's so many universities out there that if you say, I want to learn data visualization, it is a computer science programming course.
Yeah, yeah.
And I get it. You need to learn that. But if you're working in a corporate environment or any environment where you're trying to now communicate that data, that won't teach you how to do that well, right? That's really what I teach, which is how, now that you have data and now that you have an insight in that data, right? It might be an insight in consumer research. It might be sales data. It might be your web analytics. You know, you've got something that you want to communicate to an audience. Mm-hmm. How do you do that well? How do you build a story around that? How do you build a data visualization around that? And so the course combines the best practices of data visualization. So we talk, you know, about all the best practices of data visualization and how do you make a good chart and what makes a bad chart? But also, how do you deliver a presentation? How do you build a story? What is your, even like, what does your body language say when you're presenting your data? Because how you present has an impact on the credibility of the data that you're presenting and how people respond to the data you're presenting.
Yeah.
And we have seen so many times that a data analyst or a product manager or an operations manager, they have some, you know, great impactful data that can make a difference for a company, but are unable to make waves with it, are unable to make the company react to it because they can't present it well, because they just sort of throw up a chart, or even worse, they just show their spreadsheet.
Yes. Right?
And you know, here's my data and here's what I see, what's going on. Yeah. And we need to make a change in the company, and people just don't get the message and they're not impressed and they're not motivated to act, even though it might be this, you know, unbelievably great insight. And so it's really a matter of, not only do you have a data visualization that you need to improve, but you need to be able to present it. You need to be able to communicate that insight to customers, to executives, to the public, if that's who you're communicating to. And that's why we thought it was sort of a very unique way to approach a data visualization certificate, because there are plenty of data viz best practices courses out there, but no one else was trying to combine these two skills.
Yeah, good. Glad to hear. I separately train on both as well, but you've got a good approach there, bringing them together in a certificate course. That makes good sense, Randy. We've both mentioned your cool infographics site a few times. I've actually realized we've got something in common that I don't know whether is more happenstance, but both of us have chosen to have a separate brand for our blogging, in my case, customerinsightleader.com, and our commercial website, in my case, LachlanConsultancy.com. Why have you kept the InfoNew brand separate from Cool Infographics brand? Why did you go down that route?
I learned from starting the Cool Infographics site, but also watching who the competitors to Cool Infographics were and who the competitors to InfoNew were, that all of the competitors I had, they would start a blog on their company website. And every post on their blog had to be promoting their business. It had to be a sales pitch. And that was never what I wanted Cool Infographics to be. And it's not why Cool Infographics gets the amount of traffic it does and continues, you know, whatever it is now, what is it, 14, 15 years later, you know, continues to get the traffic that it does, is because it is celebrating some of the best, whether it's infographics or posters or data visualization insights, you know, or improvements, you know, and it's really meant to be inspirational for people doing the work, not pitching the InfoNude business, you know. And I always had trouble, like I couldn't get my work posted on other people's blogs because it wasn't promoting their businesses, right? And that was, it just seemed like a shame to me, because I can get so many more eyeballs, so much more traffic if I am informative, if I am inspirational for people, versus just pitching my business.
I completely agree, Randy. We were at the same heart there. I think it's funny, with all that's been learned, you would think, in more recent years about content marketing and relationship marketing, I'm still surprised how many businesses feel the need to rush to that sales approach. There isn't a recognition that, as I feel it, the rules of the game have changed. Potential customers out there want to be able to see a sharing of expertise, a generosity of spirit in what you provide to improve the general understanding and the best practice out there, as almost part of a proof point. And then if they want to go and look at what you could provide for them as services, great. But if you try and ram a sales message too soon, you close it off. It's why I've got my two separate as well.
And I mean, I hardly ever post my own work on Cool Infographics, you know, and so it's always, you know, highlighting other designers' work and linking back to their site so that people can find that designer or that company or that publisher.
Yeah.
Including, you know, other infographics design firms. I mean, of course, if I'm highlighting other designers, I'm highlighting my competition, right?
Yeah.
And that just baffles people. Like, why would you post something from somebody who could potentially be your competitor?
Yeah.
Because it's good, you know? They did a good job. Yeah.
Absolutely, Randy. Absolutely. I think it's grounded maybe in what Michael Hyatt calls that abundance rather than scarcity mindset. You know, if you believe there's more where that came from in terms of your own ideas and what you offer, you don't need to be quite so worried about celebrating good practice out there from others as well.
Yeah. So rising waters lifts all boats. And I think more people need to appreciate good design and good infographic and good data visualization design, and more companies need to be using it. So if they can see better examples of it, I think that rises the need and the, you know, the opportunities for all of the data visualization designers out there.
Well put. We've touched on a few times, so let me latch on to it. The use of the term, as you just did there, infographic. And I'm aware that it's, at least from my perspective, sort of fallen out of fashion with some people. I certainly have heard some in the wider data visualization community who sound a bit disparaging of infographics, as if they were a bit of a mistake along the way to raise awareness, and now we have current best practice in data viz. Do you think infographics, I presume you do, still have a role? And if so, why?
Oh, of course I do. but I would clarify that they have to be good infographics. Or to use my own term, cool infographics, right?
Okay.
Most infographics out there are bad.
Yeah.
Right. So let's start with that. And I think that's what has sort of turned some people off of infographics. People think infographics are easy to design. Mm-hmm. They think you can just throw some stuff together, save it as a JPEG, and boom, you've got an infographic. And, you know, it's kind of similar to YouTube, right? So there are more bad videos on YouTube than there are good ones, but the good ones, you know, rise to the top and get, you know, millions and millions of views. But there are, you know, so many videos out there that only have, you know, 7 views, you know, or something like that.
Yeah.
Because people are putting their personal stuff up there and dabbling with video production and stuff like that.
Mm.
And so that's another reason why I like to highlight the good ones on Cool Infographics. But, you know, visual communication of information and being able to tell a cohesive story in one image, whether it's a PDF or a JPEG or, you know, whatever, and saving that as an infographic and sharing that can be so powerful. You know, whether it's a simple how-to or solving a customer service question that you're constantly mm-hmm. getting, or it's a establishing the why does your product exist,
yeah.
Or, you know, even just something, you know, how do you bake an apple pie, you know, and just something, just it's a how-to, you know, something that's very shareable. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of really, really good, informative, shareable, viewable infographics out there. That make a really, really big impact. And then there's just a lot of really, really bad ones also. So, you know, data visualization, and I make a vocabulary difference here, that data visualization is a tool that we use to build infographics with. So we use data visualizations in infographics, yeah. where some people use those two words interchangeably. And I don't do that because those are two separate things. Mm-hmm. So you got to be good at data visualization to use good charts and good data visualizations in an infographic. But when you look at social media content, when you look at blog content and website content, you know, visuals are what get the most eyeballs and get the most clicks, whether it's a video, a photo, or an infographic. Infographics these days are now no longer the new hotness they were back in 2010 or even 2014. Mm-hmm. These days, they're just a staple. They're like a normal piece of content marketing.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. No, absolutely. That makes good sense, Randy. And I see the natural fit here with your wider focus on communication and visual communication, not just effective data visualization, kind of fits with that approach of still valuing infographics and other visual mechanisms within that as a communication piece. Okay.
And we see a lot of them being used internal to companies as well. So, okay. you know, what people see obviously are the public ones that everybody posts online. Mm. But we design and we see a lot of companies even doing their own, but using infographics internally that are never going to get shared publicly because it's internal, you know, proprietary corporate data.
Sure, sure.
But using it for employee education, using okay. it to yeah. share internal information, or even using them just as handouts during a presentation so that you're not, you know, giving everybody a copy of your 50 page PowerPoint deck, but you're yes. giving them an infographic summary, you know, yeah. of your presentation. Yeah. And so infographics continue to grow and find new ways to be effective.
Sounds great. If you can save many employees some overlong, boring PowerPoint presentations in their businesses, I'm sure you're a hero. Obviously, you and your team, Randy, are often brought in to do design work for companies. You've mentioned that before. Given mm-hmm. the focus that many people, including me, to declare an interest, put on training in-house teams, the company's own analysts, etc., in data visualization, I wonder when you'd recommend that businesses bring in a design agency like yourselves rather than learn to do it themselves.
That's a good question. It depends, obviously, on the situation in each company, whether they've got a design team in-house, whether that design team wants to work with data. So graphic designers, there's an odd challenge there. So I'm going to make a big generalization here. A lot of graphic designers don't like to work with data. Mm-hmm. So many of them do. Right. So there are a lot of graphic designers, trained graphic designers that are fabulous at doing data visualizations mm-hmm. and infographics. Mm-hmm. But I would say more than half of them are on the more artistic side and want to work with branding and logos and messaging sure. and colors and fonts and your brand style guide and your advertisements and, you know, with packaging and that sort of stuff. Sure. And so when you've got a design team that your designers are not comfortable in statistics. They don't want to get into understanding what the data means. They don't want to dive into even Excel. Mm-hmm. You know, either that's the time where you've got to do it yourself or you want to bring in somebody on the outside. If you've got a design team that is comfortable and is not only comfortable, but, you know, sort of interested in understanding the statistics and the data, because you really need to understand the message you're trying to communicate to be able to design to it effectively.
Yeah.
Then that's the time when you want to train them and let them learn what the best practices are and get them to be doing your data viz design. And sometimes, you know, we would come in and do a workshop with an internal group, or we might even be, you know, doing designs for a period of months or maybe for a year while the internal design team is learning from the designs that we're doing. And then they would start doing their own designs and take over more and more of that work internally.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. That makes sense. I can see that approach. I want to link back to something else you shared when you spoke with us at the beginning about your career story. You mentioned, it was quite inspirational, I hope, for a number of listeners, this time when you were between jobs and you'd been getting these design requests in that you couldn't previously fulfill by Cool Infographics. And that was kind of a launch pad for creating InfoNewt. And obviously, you successfully raised your visibility in with that expertise through your blogging. I often, in a section of the podcast interview, ask the person I'm talking to sort of share advice for maybe the younger listeners, those who are earlier in their careers. I'm conscious, with the economies as they are, a number of people will potentially be between jobs or looking for a role at the moment. From your experience, would you recommend that those who are at that stage really think about blogging and raising the visibility of their skills as a way to potentially open up new career opportunities like you found, Randy?
Absolutely. So data visualization design or infographic design or presentation design, all three of those are design jobs. So you are a designer, which means that people who are going to hire you want to see your designs. They want to see your work before they're going to hire you. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's a visual medium. So you need somewhere to have a way to demonstrate your ability, whether that's a blog or putting stuff on your LinkedIn profile or putting stuff on Facebook or Twitter, or, you know, you've got to be putting your work out there so that people can see what you're doing and what you're capable of doing. And so, you know, some of what I do is what I call sanitizing. So if it's a, you know, a confidential internal design I did for somebody else, I might take that idea and dummy up all the data, you know, so that I can have one that I could share publicly. I've done a couple just personal projects that had no client whatsoever. I didn't get paid for them at all. It was just a personal inspirational project, but it made a design that I could then publish online so that it's a design that people can see and see what, you know, designs. And that's sort of how I started some of those, which is I just wanted to try doing some design and put it out there. But yeah, you do need to have, you don't have to have a full portfolio, but it, I mean, it doesn't hurt, but you need to have, you know, somewhere that people can see, oh, he can design good charts, or he can design an infographic, or he can design presentation slides that look really good, you know, or whatever it is. You know, if you're in between jobs, take that time to make up some of your own stuff. Cause the other nice thing is that you don't have, you know, a boss or a manager that's saying, I want you to do it this way, which, you know, is not the best way to do it. Yes. But they're telling you, you got to do it that way. When you're doing it in between jobs and you're just doing it for your own portfolio, you can do it the best way you know how. Yes. Right. And say, I know this is going to look better than what somebody else is going to would force me to do in a company.
Yeah. Well put. Enjoy the moment. I guess I'm struck that you pulled out, and I can understand why, coming from your expertise, Randy, that these are kind of designer roles. I guess it's also true that a number of analysts, even some data scientists, see the need to have really effective data visualization skills as part of their repertoire of skills. Would your advice also be the same for them, that it could do them no harm if looking for analytics jobs to visually put their portfolio out there as well?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Just even, you don't have to be looking for a full-time designer role, but to be able to show your chops, to show, like, you know, here's a presentation I gave to this analytics conference, or here's, you know, this report I designed, and then you can see the visuals that I designed to go in that report, you know, that type of thing. That's the kind of thing you want to be able to show.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes sense. And as you mentioned before, the visual content is so engaging on social media. It's almost some of the ideal content to put out there to highlight yourself rather than relying on dry technical content.
And when you look at the job market, more often data visualization is a skill that people, that companies are asking for as a, you know, a skill in another role versus a full-time role all by itself. You know, it's still growing, and very few companies are at the point now where they are hiring full-time data visualization designers. Versus, hey, you're a product manager and you need to be able to do data visualization, or you're, you know, a web analytics you know, specialist and you need to be able to do data visualization design, you know, or something like that. It's usually built into another role.
Yeah, I agree. That's my experience as well. Okay. It's been really, really great to explore so many topics with you, Randy. I can't let you go without using a question that's become a favorite on these podcasts because it brings out such a diversity of answers from different types of people. Which is, can you give me an example of something you've changed your mind on in the last few years?
Yeah, I knew you were going to ask this question. And I didn't prep an answer for this one.
Nice. What strikes you then, Randy?
Something I have changed my mind on. I don't know. There's so many things that I can be fairly adamant about. I think one of them would probably be I'm a little bit more relaxed now on how much information or data or even text, you know, that kind of thing that people put into infographics.
Okay. You used to early on, to be more just visual, did you?
I wanted, you know, so, you know, over the last 15 years of cool infographics and, you know, millions of page views, we know from the web analytics that people read infographics for somewhere between 5 and 10 seconds.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And they're not reading every word. They're not, you know, reading top to bottom, everything. And when we work with clients, they're like, yes, we got to put in our company pitch and we got to put in this full product description and we got, you know, and they got to load it up. And I'm like, no, they're not going to read all that. You know, it's got to be quick and simple. And you've got to be able to read this in 5 seconds. And in the book, I call it the 5 second rule.
Yeah.
And I've probably loosened that a little bit.
Okay.
I think you should still get the main message pretty quickly. Like you should be able to understand the main message pretty quickly. Yeah. But I think it's okay to include more information because if someone's interested, if you've actually grabbed someone's attention, then they'll linger and they'll dive into more of the information that you've included. Because I was in some of my earlier critiques, I used to do a lot of, you know, critiques in my write-ups during the infographics on cool infographics. I was pretty harsh on too much text. You know, I got to cut that out. And, you know, get rid of that, you know, but and I think these days I'm a little bit, a little more relaxed about that.
Great. Nice example, Randy. Maybe there is this natural maturing to loosen up a bit with age. I'm struck by thinking before about John Schwabish. He shared a greater loosening up about pie charts. As kind of his example. So it's a similar
That's the big softening one, right? So there are people that are adamant that never ever use a pie chart. And I was never in that camp, so I didn't change. I think there's a right way to use a pie chart.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I was never of the you should never use a pie chart.
Yeah. There we go. But your example was a great one as well. That's been great. Thanks for that. And many thanks for your time today, Randy. It's been, as I expected, a pleasure to chat with you.
Absolutely, Paul. Thank you.
And thank you, everyone, for listening as well. I hope you found that helpful and continue to listen to the Customer Insight Leader podcast. More great interviews coming up. And each week, there's also fresh content on our blog, customerinsightleader.com. So you might want to check that out too. Before then, thanks, everyone, for your time. Have a great week and enjoy continuing to grow as a leader. Maybe just keep your eye out for those pieces of visual communication. You might start a collection like Randy. Who knows? Bye for now.